The Case and Cure of a Deserted Soul by Joseph Simmons. Chapter 19. Directions How to Retain a Divine Quickening Presence with Us. The next thing is directions how to retain the happiness of divine assistance. Number 1. The first is, when you have it, acknowledge it with thankfulness. Prize it, for it is a precious mercy. It is a multiplied favor. How much have you in this one thing? All the comfort and sweetness of duties, the quietness and liberty from lusts, the fruit and efficacy of ordinances depends upon this. If God holds back this one mercy, all these are gone. Consider what a difference it is in yourselves, and ways when you are carried in the gracious arms of God your helper, and when you are left to walk in your own strength. Oh, how great is God's goodness to you! He calls upon others for the same things, and conscience stands as Pharaoh's taskmasters, requiring the quota of bricks but not allowing the straw. It impels and presses but gives not enlargement of heart. It buffets and wounds them for neglect as the hard creditor that, taking the poor debtor by the throat, says, "Pay me that thou owest me," but yields him no power to do it. Thus God might deal with you also, for he does not owe assistance to us, yet we owe obedience to him. Remember, we once had power, and it is just to demand what we cannot do, because the weakness that is in us is of ourselves. We have impoverished ourselves. Therefore, when in much mercy he puts forth his hand into the work with you, be very thankful. If the work is not done, he is no loser. If done, and well done, he is no gainer. Job 22, verse 2, 35, verses 7 through 8, Psalm 16, verse 2. But the gain is all to you. All the good that comes by it is to yourself. And take this also into your thoughts. It is a sign of great loving kindness. Consider the infinite distance between you and the great God. Would a king set down to work for and with a mean man in his trade to help to maintain him? One thing more I add, that you have cause to be thankful, because by this God testifies his acceptance of you and of your way, or else his hand would be far from you. Get therefore and keep your heart in a state of thankfulness, and this is one way to continue it. Number 2. The second means of retaining communion with God is by maintaining faithfulness. Take heed of taking from God in order to set up yourself. Put not that to your account which belongs to him. Take heed of sacrificing to your strength or parts. Acknowledge that all the excellency of all your actions is of him. God is very jealous of his honor, and, as I have said, oftentimes leaves his people to feel their own weakness because they honored not his strength. If the faculties of your soul bring in willingly and plentifully offerings unto God, says David, when so much store with much freeness was brought in by the people to build the temple, "Now, our God, we thank thee and praise by thy glorious name, but who am I, and what is my people, that we should be able to offer so willingly after this sort? For all things come of thee, and of thine own have we given thee. O Lord our God, all this store that we have prepared to build thee in house by thine holy name cometh of thine hand and is all thine own." 1 Chronicles 29, verses 13 through 14 and 16. So the apostle, who was so courageous when in that distress before Nero, did not ascribe it to his own strength, but acknowledged that it was the Lord. "The Lord stood by me and strengthened me," 2 Timothy 4:17. It was his way to strip himself and to cast the honor of all his ministry and actions upon God. "By the grace of God, I am that I am," 1 Corinthians 15:9 through 10. And you see with how full a gale of divine grace he was carried in all his way. Learn therefore in all things, wherein the excellency of life and grace shines forth, to know that that as the moon shines not by a light of its own, but by a light which it has from the sun, So your luster and vigor in your way is not of yourself, but from him who is your life. Do this so that you may not be drawn down to the feeding of your pride. These successes should be ascribed to the glory of God. Whatever you do, whenever you are carried through any service, still say as the apostle, not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. 2 Corinthians 3, verse 5. I may say in a spiritual sense, says Solomon in a natural, honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and the presses shall burst out with new wine. Proverbs 3, verses 9 through 10. As by the first fruits they acknowledged that all was his, and that it was not their tillage and labor, but the influence of his blessing which caused the field to be clad with grass and stored with corn, so also you should acknowledge that it is not anything in yourself, but all of God, that you bring forth the fruits of righteousness. And then his promise is to be with you, and to make you to abound still more, and to bring forth even more fruit. Psalm 73, verses 23 through 24. Next, in addition to acknowledging his help, use it. When he comes with excitement and enlargements of heart, do not turn back the inspiration of the Almighty. Quenching the Spirit is often the cause why God shuts in his Spirit. I have spoken of this before, but I will add something more here in revealing how we sin against the Spirit. Know therefore that you may grieve the Spirit not only by doing evil voluntarily against knowledge, but also by omitting good, and by remissness in good by omitting a known duty. When God shows you what is good and stands ready to help you, if you walk not in your way, you provoke him to leave you. And because this is an evil so incident unto men through sloth and worldly affections and distractions, I will briefly declare the sinfulness and foolishness of it. Letter A. The sinfulness of neglecting your duty is a denying of God his due. It is a withholding from him that which is due to him, and you are his creatures, servants, and children, a people in covenant. He comes not to you as that cruel servant to his fellow servant, in Matthew 18, verses 28 through 29, but he entreats and graciously moves for his own. He forgave you all your former debts, or sins, and now, though he might demand the whole, yet he is content to take it as you can pay it. And will you now deny him? The flesh calls, and you yield. The world commands, and you obey. Yet you are not debtors to these, but to the Spirit. Romans 8, verse 12. God comes with one hand to give, and with the other to take. And he gives more to you than he demands of you. He gives you leave to ask him whatsoever you will. Matthew 21, verse 22. And is not backward to hear. He doth not turn back your prayer. Psalm 66, verses 19 through 20. He might have said upon your praying to him as Solomon of Adonijah, God do so to me and more also if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. 1 Kings 2 verse 23. And if he should shut out your prayer, what a sad case would you be in. Therefore, be not of a withdrawing heart to deny God. Consider further, when you neglect and refuse to do your duty, you deny his sovereignty, and in effect, you say, as Pharaoh, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? Exodus 5, verse 2. And as those rebels, this man shall not have dominion over us. Luke 19, verse 14. Your denying of God in this kind is worse than when the wicked, and such as are forsaken of him, do deny him, for they stand not engaged unto God. God has not paid so dearly for them. He has not done that good for them that he has done for you. They have not so given up themselves to him as you have done. Yet when they do not know what they know, he visits their sin upon their heads. God took the kingly throne from that great king Nebuchadnezzar for his sin, and so God dealt with his son Belshazzar. The reason you may see, thou, O Belshazzar, his son, has not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. Daniel 5, verse 22. You stand against God for a small matter, having given up yourselves to God. If a man courts a woman, he takes it not so ill that she will not bestow herself upon him, but if she is his wife, he is much more greatly displeased if she denies him some particular duty. They never knew as much of God, nor of his way, as you have known. They think it is a hard way, and that God is a hard master. But you have found much good. You have had a gracious assistance, God meeting you in the way with gracious hand of help. You have also had a sweet recompense. The work, having been your wages, it has brought meat unto your mouth. Therefore, it is very sinful for you to withdraw from the way. There are other particular aggravations of the sinfulness of the neglect of duty. Omission becomes more sinful when the duty is of great importance and much hangs upon it. For example, in the neglect of duties in public places, magistracy, or ministry, much evil follows. So also is the neglect of duties aggravated when the duties have great influence into the life of a Christian, such as meditation, searching the heart, repentance, and so forth. If these things are not done, God loses his due many other ways, because the spirit and the life of other duties depends upon these. All duties are necessary, but some are of more importance. They are the weightier matters of the law, which must be especially minded. Matthew 23, verse 23, and Luke 11, verse 42. Also, when the duty is much enforced by former resolutions and present impulsions, the omission is more sinful. When you have found much good in it, and when it is most facile in respect of ability and opportunity, in such cases the disobedience of the heart is greater, and so the sin is also greater. In respect of the neglect, the sinfulness is increased when it is extended, and when a man voluntarily lives in neglect of that which he knows. It is also increased when it is not lamented, the heart in this case being not only stubborn, but secure, senseless, and impenitent. In these cases, this sin becomes exceedingly sinful and very provoking. Letter B. As you have seen the sinfulness, so also cast your eye upon the foolishness of denying God what he calls for. In every voluntary action, you have a reason that moves you, especially when two ways are set before you. Now then, consider what it is that moves you to withdraw yourself from that unto which you are excited of God. What is it, the shunning of any evil? Think then if the good which is in God's way is not greater than all evil, and if the less of God is not a greater evil than all the evil you shun. Or it could be the difficulty of the duty. Think then, have you not found the way smooth? Does not God offer his hand with you to the work? What is the work to the wages? Or what is it to gratify yourself with some present advantage? Think, then, if anything can be good without God, and if there is not a greater good in his way, and if you may not have that very thing in God's way which you are seeking outside of it. Thus, you will find that without reason, you deny God. God has devised the best way for your good. His wisdom and goodness have conspired to prepare that way which might be best for you. Therefore, to follow your own counsels and affections before his counsel is folly. See all that God has done. Look into this visible world. Who could have by wisdom framed and ordered everything with such order and beauty as all things that now stand by his hand? Yet this is the great foolishness of the world. Men think they can order things better for themselves than God has done, and this very principle is the main root of all the strayings of men. If a ship were at sea, in the winds among many rocks, Would it be better that the captain, who is skillful, should steer her, or the passenger, who does not know his way? Consider that good and evil are hardly known. They are often veiled with such visages as there needs to be wisdom to discern between them, and it is always safest to follow the greatest light. Your wisdom is but borrowed. It is but a drop from that ocean of wisdom which is in him who is wisdom. And it was given to you for this end, that you might be ordered by his wisdom to the true and greatest good, as the eye and the body was given you, not to be a sole and sufficient guide to the body, but that by it you might be capable of the light of the sun, without which the eye cannot see. Therefore it is folly to be led your own spirit, and not by God's. You cross your hopes and prayers, for it is vain to ask or expect any good except that which is in the way of good. The same God that undertakes to save you has shown you the way. Now, if you refuse the way, you refuse your own good. Thou shalt guide me by thy counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Psalm 73, verse 24. You refuse to do what you must do. When God speaks, he will not be denied. If you stand out now, he will have it out another way. He will have it out in repentance and mourning. And though for now your heart may not be bowed to do your duty, he will make you repent of your folly before he will put up with such disobedience. You also sin against the Spirit when you do less than is clearly due, and when you do not as Caleb, who followed the Lord wholly. Numbers 14, verse 24. By wholly, wholly, means completely. Or when, like ill debtors, you pay something, but not the whole. Think not that it is enough for you to be doing good, for you may as well sin in doing good as in doing evil. Now note that the deficiency of a man in doing good is from a twofold spring: insufficiency of strength, and malignity and sinfulness of heart. In the former, you are like a sick man that cannot do that what he would, but in the other, like an idle man that will not do what he can. The difference between these two is that when a man comes short out of his weakness, or out of weakness, there is a present willingness. His heart yields all, and he consents fully to the demands of God, grieving that he cannot do what he would. Romans 7:15. This is not imputed unto sin. God will not charge the defect upon such as are his, because they are not under the law, but under grace. Romans 6:14. But voluntary neglect he will require at your hands. It is certain that all the other churches were found defective, and did not do all as they should have, as well as Ephesus. But this was that which brought Ephesus under the rod, because she did not do what she could, but was voluntarily deficient. Revelation 2, verse 4. A man may be defective in two ways. Number one, by doing less for quality than he should, by not putting so much into his duty as is required, or by not bestowing the cost that he might, rather being flight, formal, heartless, and so forth. This is like the sin described in Malachi 1 verse 14. Having in the flock a male, they offered a corrupt thing. This provoked God unto indignation, yea, to execration against them. God looks for what we can do. Deuteronomy 6 verse 6, Ecclesiastes 9 verse 10. So David says, I have prepared with all my might. 1 Chronicles 29 verse 2. Common stuff will serve for an ordinary house, but if it is for a palace for a king, then silver and gold and great art are used. Number two, by doing less for quantity than we ought. God stands much upon quantity, because all our ability is from him, and to curtail his service is a dishonor to him, for it detracts from his greatness and shows what little respect the heart bears for him when it puts him off with half, short, lame, and curtailed duties. We are accustomed to framing our actions and our carriages toward men in a way proportionable to their quality. Our deportment unto a king is such as may declare a stamp and impression of his majesty in the heart. God is sensible of this disesteem. See how he pleads with them. If you offer the blind for a sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto your governor. Will he be pleased with you or accept your person, says the Lord of hosts? Malachi 1 verse 8. Cursed be he that hath a male and voweth and sacrificeth unto the Lord a corrupt thing. For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen. That's verse 14. And again, if God should not be strict in the quantity of his service, religion in time might come to nothing. It would be so lessened and nibbled at that in time there would scarcely be any memorial of a God or any honor done unto him. Here, by the way, let me take liberty to answer two questions. Chapter 20, Questions and Answers Regarding to Our Duty to God. Question: Since all come short of what they know they should do, and God does not impute that as sin to them that are believers, how may a man know when his deficiency is imputed as a sin to him? Answer, number one, when his defect is voluntary. He does but little and is not willing to do more. He knows that he should do more, but his will is against it. God expects this at least, that though his people are unable to do all, yet they should be willing. He will have all their hearts towards him, and this David gave in charge to his son Solomon. And thou, Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart, and with a willing mind. For the Lord searcheth all the hearts, and understandeth all the imaginations of the thoughts. If thou seek him, he will be found of thee. But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. 1 Chronicles 28, verse 9. Answer number two. When you do less than you have done previously. The same necessity is still urging. Conscience is still pressing. Opportunity for serving still abounds. This was the sin of that backsliding people. They fell from their first works. Revelation 2, verse 4. Therefore Christ threatened to forsake them. Answer number three. When you do less than those that have like abilities, occasions, engagements, and opportunities. It is even more clear that you sin when others that have more straits, more encumbrances, less abilities, less means, and less advantages, when these servants exceed you in fruitfulness and in all the ways of godliness and piety. Answer number four. When you live not by what you do, but lusts grow strong and grace weak, and all is worse and worse. In the regimen of bodily health, when a man declines, it is a sign that he has not taken due care of his diet, rest, or exercise. You must hold up life. The church of Ephesus doubtless was strong, but she was still a loser. Her spirit and strength decayed. With him that is in his trade, but does not follow it deliberately, when he goes back to examine his estate, according to the wise man's speech, he becomes poor that deals with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Proverbs 10 verse 4. By much slothfulness the building decays, and through idleness of the hands the house droppeth through. Ecclesiastes 10 verse 18. Answer number 5. When God does not accept what you do. When he is pleased with our ways, he shows his liking of them. Sometimes this is by a secret testimony, which gives us joy. Our rejoicing in this, the testimony of our conscience, that in simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God, we have had our conversation in the world, and more abundantly to you word. 2 Corinthians 1 verse 12. Enoch had this testimony, that he pleased God. Hebrews 11 verse 5. Sometimes he does this by rewarding, as he did Phinehas, Numbers 25, verses 11 through 13, and sometimes by filling the heart with much spiritual life and vigor in the work. But where God accepts not, there is a dampness upon the spirit. The duty goes forth like the raven out of the ark, but it does not return as the dove does with an olive branch in its mouth. And in this, a man is in no way bettered by what he does. Answer number 6. Inquire into the reason why you do less than God calls for, and take a true account of yourself, or examine yourself in what you do. Ask your heart what moves it, and take a full answer from it, for you may discern by the reason that it gives whether all is well or not. Undoubtedly, it will have some degree of pretense, but weigh all in the balance. If the reason is insufficient, you are sinfully deficient. You may find slothfulness and a reluctance to be at so much pains, which was their fault, in Isaiah 64, verse 7. None stirred himself up. The reason may be in respect to your lusts, your needless ease, superfluous gain, unnecessary employment, or unseasonable delight. These and such things are robbing God of his due, and leave a great guilt upon your soul. Question. How may a man know he does his duty when the heart is still pressed to more and more than is done? Answer. I will answer by way of caution and proposition. Caution number 1. Be liberal. Keep your hearts open and full for God. Though other things should be done, yet the heart may, and ought to, hunger most after God. These paths are more noble, more sweet, and more suitable to a holy heart. A child should be willing to do what his father bids him, though he sends him as David into the field to keep sheep, even though he would rather be in his father's presence. You should always come to God with delight in him, and go away with desire after him, as they say in meats. It is good to live with an appetite. Satiety is hurtful. That friend is scarce welcome that is glad to be gone from us. It is a sign that you have little love to God when you come with unwillingness, stay with weariness, and go out with gladness. Does that bring to mind you the modern church? How people are more interested and concerned about who's going to be at the buffet table as to whether the Baptists are going to be there before the Catholics get there and so on and so forth. How you sit in church and wait for the pastor to finish, like, hurry up already, I'm hungry. Hurry up already, I've got better things to do than sit here and so on. But I digress, let me get back to the material. It is a sign that you have little, the friend is scarce welcome that is glad to be gone from us. It is a sign that you have little love to God when you come with unwillingness. Stay with weariness and go out with gladness. I repeated it again, just to be on track here. Be ever bent towards him. Account your duties and converse with him your pleasant seasons. Let all other things be as you labor, and this as your meal. Never think you do enough. Say as David, I will yet praise him more and more. Psalm 71, verse 14. Caution number 2. Be rational. Take heed of being bound with more laws than are imposed by God, and of adding to the yoke which he puts upon you. There may be much deceit in having the heart engaged to more than God requires. There are two things which, concurring with principles and dispositions that are good and holy, may vex the soul with a kind of spiritual oppression and extortion. Number 1. An erroneous conscience. Sometimes it errs by exacting less than it should and giving acquittances when the debt is not fully discharged. So sometimes it also errs by going beyond its commission and exacting above the bond. A weak servant sent to gather up his master's debts may mistake his business by misjudging of the sums, or requiring 100 pounds where the bond is but for 100 crowns. The spirit of a man is so apt to err that, like water, which is hardly kept within its bounds, if it transgresses not on the left hand by defect, it often mistakes on the right hand by excess. Thus superstitious spirits do more than they need, and lie in chains of their own making, subjecting themselves to ordinances and ways which God made not. Poverty, single life, absolute obedience unto men, confessions, penance, fastings, watchings, pilgrimages, canonical hours of prayer, and so forth. Superstition is prodigal, and there is this quantity or quality in men, that in those things which indeed are enjoyed of God, they are deficient, but in their own inventions, they are abundant. They loathe that God should carve for himself, but if God will take it out of their cutting, they will go far. This is true of the Pharisees, who, in a way of religion, were most irreligious by neglecting judgment and mercy, Luke 11, verse 42. But in traditions and rules of their own coining, they were very free and liberal. Papistry offends more by addition and multiplication in religion than by subtraction. And as the superstitious, so also melancholy and fearful spirits are often ready to go beyond the line, bringing themselves into uninhabitable and unsufferable ways of religion. Where the sun of piety, in a mistaking and yielding spirit, is so hot that nothing can grow under it, nature is parched, strength is wasted, health impaired, and estate neglected. I have known some that have thought themselves ill-employed in anything but in the exercise of religion, and when they have been in their business, or at a meet, or in bed, have been forced to lay everything aside to go to prayer or some other religious exercise. Number 2. Satan puts men upon more. As he sometimes appears an angel of darkness, withholding men from good or drawn to evil, so he sometimes appears as an angel of light, exciting unto good. For it is his principle and constant rule, as much as he can, to sail with the wind and to row with the tide, joining himself to the tempers and spirits of men in their own way. And if he finds principles and dispositions not altogether so fit for his turn, if he cannot change them, he will use them as he finds them rather than cross them. He found in the Jews a great zeal for the law of Moses, and he made this to use of it to set them against the gospel. Saul also was one that made conscience, as it seemed, of seeking God before he went to battle, and hereupon Samuel, not coming according to expectation, Satan puts him to offer sacrifice himself, and he did it with that impetuousness and importunity that though Saul knew it was not his office, yet the case standing as it did, he forced himself and offered the burnt offering. 1 Samuel 13, verse 12. Satan has in this way a great end. By it, he brings men into great straits. What have the Jews lost by that misguided zeal and religious disposition? And by this, he wearies and tires out the spirits of men in their way, and breeds them in a dislike and weariness in religion, riding the soul, as it were, out of breath. So we have known many very forward and active for a time, but now, as wearied men, they are laid down to rest, and their life is gone. By this, he also works ill effects upon others, who by the rigorous courses of religions, men look upon religion as a tyrant. Who is able to sum up his treacheries? What a plot was that which he had at Corinth? His device was to get advantage upon them, 2 Corinthians 2, verse 11. And now he saw a zeal in the church against the offender, and a mournful spirit in the poor man, and now he drives on the chariot and works in the zealous spirit of the church, that they may hold on in a severe way against him, that he might be swallowed up of overmuch sorrow, in verse 7. Objection. But how may a man know when he is pressed to good by Satan? Answer. The print of his foot will be found where he has been, and though he puts them upon good, yet is always in an evil way, as for instance he may be discerned. Number 1. When he divides piety from mercy and carries the soul on without care of the body. When God comes, he comes with much godliness, and as Jacob drove as softly as the children and cattle were able to bear, Genesis 33, verse 14, so he will not put on the soul in such a way as to destroy the body. Grace and the law are for the perfection of nature, not its destruction. The religion that Satan devises is hard and cruel. How did the priests of Baal cut and lance themselves, even till their blood poured out? 1 Kings 18, verse 28. The Jews learned from God to sacrifice beasts, but Satan taught them to sacrifice their children. They burned their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my heart. Jeremiah 7, verse 31. He would rather lose his rights than see his servants be oppressed. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, Matthew 12, verse 7. Yet we must not press this rule of mercy so far that it becomes an immoderate indulgence into nature. The soul must not be too much a loser by the body, nor God for man, nor must this be extended to the base favoring and sparing of ourselves in times of persecution. For he that so saves himself shall lose himself, Luke 9, verse 24. If you send your servant upon business of great importance, and he falls sick, and so does not do what you were, or what you expected, you will excuse him. But if he says as the sluggard, the wind blew, and the air was stormy, and wet, and cold, Proverbs 20, verse 4, you will not take this well. When you cannot do him service through disproportion of your strength to your work, he will bear with you. But know his will as you are able, you must obey.